Welcome, everybody, to the Fastcast. I'm Slowpoke number one, John Nicolaitis.
And I'm Slowpoke number two, David Chalante.
Yes, you didn't hear any of the fear in my voice as I tried to recall how this starts. But we're here today to be fast and cast to your ears.
Yep, we do the quick stuff, the stuff that's more up to date rather than the slow stuff that we normally do.
Yep, because, man, we are so slow. The current game we're playing for the next, like, the next episode we're recording, I'm just like, wow, I feel like we're really coming to this late.
Oh, really?
Yeah, and it's...
Are we allowed to say what it is? Like, I feel like we're kind of being teasers right now if we're not just going to say the name of the episode.
I mean, we can. I don't really care. Will the bosses care?
Yeah. Go ahead.
Okay, yeah. So, we're playing Alien Isolation right now. I'm even recording some of, like, Let's Play footage, and...
That, you know, might turn out good, might turn out not, but now that you've said it, it definitely has to be released, so we go.
Worst case, there'll be 5 minutes of it on our YouTube, on our Facebook page.
Yeah, it'll just be, like, a Scream compilation.
But especially recording that makes me feel like I'm really coming to this late, because I'm like, oh, look, I'm filming myself be afraid of Alien Isolation. How old do I feel?
That's a good point. See, I'm playing it the traditional, dignified way.
Yes.
Where I just turn off all of the lights and play it alone.
Yeah, but see,
I don't invite an audience into that space.
I'm so scared. I need an audience. Even the audience isn't helping.
You need someone to, like, psychologically hold your hand.
I need the audience to be in my room while I play. So, you know, if anyone wants to come and watch me play, hit us up in the comments.
All right. Well, we've been doing that, I guess. I don't know. Damn.
What have you been doing, David? I've been afraid. What are you doing?
Oh, I'm not actually that deep into Alien Isolation yet. I've been playing another game. We're not doing this one for the podcast, but the one with the superpowers on the PlayStation that you lent me.
Injustice.
Infamous. Infamous Second Son.
Infamous, yes.
Yeah. No, I'm actually having a fair bit of fun with that. It's much better than the first one.
I quite liked the first one, but
So did I.
I saw that it wasn't epic.
Yeah.
It reminded me of Killzone. Like, it was a great console exclusive, but...
Yeah, and this is, like... I've heard that the second one is a lot better in terms of, like, character and stuff like that. And my biggest problem with the first one is that the basic attack is your shooting thing, but you have to hold down, I think, two buttons to use the basic shooting. There's a lot of little tediums like that. And climbing up buildings is really exhausting because you kind of have to hop, 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 hop up the side of the building. Whereas in this one, you can just, like, go straight into a vent and whoosh, you're up the top, and you can run up walls, and, like, your shooting is just a single button now. So there's a lot of things I've done to streamline it. And it's just, the city is a lot more, what's the word I'm looking for here? Like, I don't know, just got a lot more character. Like, obviously it's based on real life Seattle.
Memorable?
Yeah, memorable. It's a lot more memorable. It's just a much nicer place to be in.
Yeah, I think making the cities memorable is something you really have to do in an open world game.
Mm.
Because depending on your tastes and who you are, if those worlds feel bland and, like, you can't remember where things are, I think that really ruins it for me.
Yeah, no, I'm...
I know, like, how to get around San Andreas, right? Because I played so much of it. It's like, I know where all the streets are. Anytime I jump into GTA, or even when I jumped into GTA 5, I was like, oh yeah, I know where everything is.
Yeah. And there's, like, it isn't just, like, a familiar of layout, though. Like, there's something about specifically Los Angeles in both of the ones that you mentioned that isn't quite... What am I trying to say here? Like, the character, I feel, of that city is captured a lot better in GTA 5 and in San Andreas than New York City is in GTA 3 or even GTA 4. It's better in 4 than it is in 3, but there's still something I think that's kind of missing that's a lot more present in GTA 5. And I feel like that's a similar thing. They're kind of capturing the spirit of Seattle. Like, I've never been there, but from what I understand, like, the stereotype of Seattle is, I feel like that's kind of present in this game.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Cool.
All right. So that's me rambling about that. We weren't actually supposed to start with that topic at all, were we?
Was that a topic? I didn't know that we're supposed to talk about Injustice at all.
No, that's what I'm saying. Like, that was just me. That's just me spinning off the dome.
But that's what we are. That's how we're doing. That's fast. It's relevant. It's new.
Yeah. We're so fast that we're too fast for our plans.
Okay.
We should probably talk about our cool, awesome, cool news.
Oh, yes. So we have now joined the annals of history, the grand empire of fans and fan take. We're doing a giveaway, is what I'm trying to say.
Yeah. He tried to get there, but he didn't quite land it.
Yep.
The Slowpokes are doing our first giveaway.
Yay!
So, the awesome thing we're giving away is a copy of Shadow of War and a copy of Shadow of Mordor, because our next game will be the latter, Shadow of Mordor, and we thought, hey, timing's pretty good on this.
Yep.
The new one's coming out. Mm-hmm. We're doing the old one.
Yep.
Why don't we give the new one and the old one to our loyal listeners? So all you need to do to have a shot at this good gaming prize
is be
in with a chance
to win it.
Jump on our Facebook page. There'll be a post on there specifically about this competition, this giveaway that we're doing. Like the post and share it. And if you want an additional entry, you can also go to Twitter and tweet at the Slowpokes Podcast, and that's at Slowpokes Podcast, with the hashtag Slowpokes Giveaway.
Slowpokes Giveaway.
Slowpokes Giveaway. So again, that's at Slowpokes Cast with the hashtag Slowpokes Giveaway. Mm-hmm. The rest of the tweet can be whatever you want. You can call me a jerk and you'll still get in the comp.
Yep.
But
yep. I'll make sure that goes through.
We'll do our best to remain impartial.
Yep.
If you want to get in with a chance on that, the entries close on the 9th of October, which is also when our episode will go up.
Mm-hmm.
And we won't be announcing the winner on the episode, obviously, that we'd have to have a ridiculously good turnaround time to do that. but yeah, just make sure you're in by the 9th of October, and you could very well be a Slowpokes giveaway receiver
of a game. Just think about it. If you're the only person to enter, you could get both copies. Huh? Huh?
Actually, you can't. It is limited to one prize per person. So John just told you a lie.
David, why are you the fun police?
I don't know why you had me write up a thing of terms and conditions if you weren't even going to read them, John.
Everyone who enters gets a game.
No, they don't. They don't. Please read the terms and conditions if you are confused about what John is saying. The other thing that we should say is I like to try and keep our opinions of the games we cover a little bit mysterious
close
before the episodes
to the
are
chest.
Released. But Shadow of Mordor is a ridiculously fun game, and I can only imagine that Shadow of War will be similar. Now, our opinions are a little bit more complex than that, so please listen to the episode if you want to get a full spiel on it.
We don't just say for an hour. That would be really hard.
It's a good prize, is what I'm saying. It's not going to be one of those things where we're giving you a prize and then you listen to the episode and it's like, oh, by the way, this game's fucking shit.
Yes. Yeah, we wouldn't do that. but yeah, like David said, we both kind of liked Shadow of Mordor a lot, so we thought we'd give away a copy. This way you can sort of share, you know, the podcast with people and also maybe get something.
Yeah, exactly. You can do us a solid and we can do very, very limited numbers of you a solid. Yeah. So there we go.
So on top of your already goodwill for sharing such quality entertainment, you can maybe potentially get something.
All right. Well, that's our giveaway spiel done. Do you want to move into some actual topics for the week?
Oh, I do. I do. I want to rustle up some topics and mosey on down to the next thing.
I get it. Listeners, do you see where he's going with this?
I'm here to talk about Red Dead 2.
Ka-pew, yes. Ka-pew. So on the topic of fucking sick as shit, awesome, fun games, Red Dead Redemption is one of my favorite games.
Showing your hand there again. It's one of your favorite games ever.
We're not
going
to do a Red Dead episode ever. Like, are we?
We've both played it.
We played Red Dead years and years ago because it's a very, very good game. and so I'm very excited about Red Dead 2. Do we know if it's coming out on PC? I really should know that.
Quick Googling break. Google, 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 Google. Google, Google, are you Googling?
So, we don't know if that's coming out on PC. I really hope it is, because that's the version I would want to get. But yeah, Red Dead 1, fucking amazing. And we've got this coolest shit new trailer. John, you and I have both watched the trailer. Yeah, what were your impressions?
It's a pretty good... This is what I want for a teaser, quote-unquote, trailer.
No, it's hardly a teaser, but...
But, like, this is what I want. Like, I don't want... I've seen this. I don't know too much, but there's things you can glean from it. You can see sort of what the gameplay is going to look like. You can see how the game is going to be and feel and that kind of stuff. It gives you a little bit more than like the Last of Us 2 teaser that came out. That's like a story teaser. This one bridges the gameplay and narrative a little better.
Yeah. For me. So I've very deliberately avoided watching any trailers for the... Oh, so you said The Last of Us. Sorry, I thought you meant Life is Strange. But yeah, The Last of Us, I thought that was a very good trailer as well because it sets up a premise without actually spoiling anything.
This is true.
But the Red Dead 2 trailer, I think, is pretty... Look, one of the things that actually struck me very immediately is that it looks very, very good. And I understand that, like, the original Red Dead was on... Like, I played it on 360, I'm pretty sure.
Yeah.
So there is a generational gap there. But I was just sitting there looking at that game and I'm like... Is it gonna look that good though? Like it doesn't feel like a game. Like were we specifically looking at maybe like an early PC build, and they haven't toned it down for consoles or something yet? Because it looks very, very good.
If Aliens Colonial Marines has taught us anything, gamers will get really mad if you lie to them about how games look.
Yeah.
Right. So I doubt that they're gonna come out with a trailer like this and be like, oh, it's not going to look like this at all. Don't be ridiculous. And also, when you look at the trailer itself, what they're doing to me seems like a good example of layering properly.
What do you mean by that?
Like, so the detail in the world is layered in a way that makes me think it could be rendered in gameplay properly.
Okay.
Yeah. So when you look at the textures up close, they're actually very, they seem a little bit more simple, but it's like...
Well, those are the parts of the game that made me the most surprised, right? So there's one or two shots right near the start of the trailer where you've got like a wide shot of the horse and it looks really good because it's mostly in silhouette and all that kind of thing.
Yeah.
And so I don't jump at that because it's very easy to make a silhouette look good. What got me surprised was some of the close-ups on people's faces. And again, those were probably in cutscenes and they're going to be pretty meticulously animated and whatnot. But just like the faces just look so much like noticeably better than they would in GTA 5. And so, I mean, it's obviously been a few years, but again, like I was just very surprised. I thought it was going to look exactly like GTA 5, but I feel like there are things that they're doing there that are clear improvements.
Yeah. Now that I think about it, Rockstar really likes to actually upgrade how games looks. Cause I remember, you know, the original GTAs were these top down shooters. And then they went to 3 and then San Andreas, where they started to have even the main character.
Well, there was Vice City in between those.
Oh, yeah. I never played that, so it doesn't count. But who cares? Vice City.
But Vice City is a very good bridging between them because it used a lot of the same tech from GTA 3.
Yeah.
But it looks a little bit more like you can see the line. Because when they went to San Andreas, I'm pretty sure they used... like a whole different skeletal system for their models and animations and stuff. And so I watched a series on this a little while ago that was pretty interesting about like how bodies were created and like the pieces that they used to make them up and stuff like that. But
I feel like if you took all the games in Rockstar's catalog and put them in a line, you can see them evolving in like a really positive linear direction.
It's because it's weird as well. Like when you think about San Andreas, and then you had San Andreas, then GTA 4, then Red Dead, then L.A. Noire was in there as well somewhere.
Mm-hmm.
And then you've gone to GTA 5. And it's like, what am I trying to say here? Like, San Andreas and GTA 5, there's a similarity in aesthetic between the two of them, like in artistic direction.
Yeah.
But like in terms of model quality, they're miles apart and there are so many points in between that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no.
Does that make sense? No. Like, I think that's weird that like those two games are more similar to each other in terms of like character and direction.
Yeah.
But like technology and quality wise, there's so many other games in between that just feel very different. Like how different L.A. Noire feels to either of those two games, you know?
Yeah, I just think it's very impressive. So, you know, it's great to see that they're continuing this trend of being fantastic. By being fantastic with cowboys.
And that's the other thing too. Like, there are still problems that I have, even in like the most recent one, GTA 5, like media critical analysis type problems I have with the stories that they tell and whatnot. But Red Dead, I think, is actually a pretty solid, like the Red Dead Redemption is the only one I played. That's actually a very solid game from a narrative perspective and from a, like a media critique sort of perspective. Like every game has problems, but there's something that's very whole and deliberate and considered about that I think is a little bit absent from the GTA series, and even like LA Noire was very poor from a narrative perspective. So I'm really excited for this next one because I'm hoping it'll have a similar quality of like characterization and you know, theme and all that kind of stuff.
I'd have to go back and revisit it actually paying attention. Because what I remember a lot of is just the multiplayer shooting people. So I do remember the narrative being a different whole entity to the GTA series of games.
Yeah. And like, it's a little bit more in line with like, in GTA 4, you've got like Nico Bellic and his whole story, and it's surprisingly serious, you know? And it's,
yeah.
It's also kind of dumb because, you know, the whole story is about getting revenge. In GTA 4, it's all about getting revenge on whoever betrayed you and killed your friends, and the whole game you spend, you know, taking assassination contracts and all of this fucking stupid shit. Like,
yeah.
They try and play with that, but it's also very contradictory.
Yeah.
Whereas in Red Dead, I feel like there's a lot more consideration put into the characterization of... what's the dude's name?
John Marston?
John Marston, yeah. And they obviously understand the genre of the Western. It's a lot more codified than whatever the genre of a GTA game is, I guess.
Aggressive
a mobster?
No. GTA has now become aggressive American satire.
Yeah, but even then, like, you talk about satire, some of it's clever and some of it is just super, super cheap exaggeration.
Notice like, my what I said didn't involve any distinguishation for quality. this is what they're doing, that's all I'm saying.
Yeah, I think that's probably fair. Like, it's... And I guess GTA 5 is, if you were to try and tie it to a genre, is most like a heist film?
Yeah.
I guess?
That's all that I remember from that game.
Yeah.
But anyway.
Anyway.
Red Dead
2. I'm very excited for it.
I want to see more horse balls in the next trailer, though. That's all.
Yeah, I forgot to mention that. Twitter is going crazy for the dynamically animated horse testicles that you get a half-decent shot of.
When I hear that, though, I expect like a full 5 seconds of balls in the front of the film camera.
Just
like,
full bouncing, yeah.
But I did not see that. Very disappointed. Hopefully, it was just a
relaxed, gentle sway.
Yeah, hopefully we can put that video out in the future. You know, really give people what they want. Give me what I want. Anyway, enough about horse balls.
Well, let's talk about something a little bit more highbrow. So this is something I thought was actually super fucking cool. Assassin's Creed Origins has... I'm pretty sure it's called Assassin's Creed Origins, but the Assassin's Creed Ancient Egypt has a education mode now. So I think this is exclusive to the PC version of the game, but it is a free update.
Mm.
What this is basically, you know, you turn this on and nobody attacks you. Nobody gets angry at you. You can go wherever you want. But you can explore the world and you get little bits of information on what you're seeing. So you might go to someone preparing, you know, a past person for mummification, and it'll give you some information on what mummification is and, you know, the process involved in it and why it's spiritually significant and things like that, which I think is the world's coolest fucking idea. and it's one of the best things I've heard in ages.
Yeah, I mean... a lot of games have had this kind of history built into the main game where they might mention historical events, especially the Assassin's Creed series where they usually involve real people.
Even in, I think, maybe not the first one, but definitely the second one onwards, you would go to a place and you would get little notifications and you could press pause and go into the encyclopedia and get one or two paragraphs on a building or whatever that you visited. But it wasn't integrated into the game with its own exclusive mode. Like this one is.
No, this is true.
And I feel like they're making it a lot more accessible and a much more prominent part of the game. And I think that's only a good thing.
Yeah. Apparently, actual historians and Egyptologists curated the information that's being presented as well.
Oh, that's cool. Yeah, because
it's not just the people from the studio; it's actually people who understand the text.
Yeah, I've always felt that like the Assassin's Creed games have probably had. If not like dedicated historian consultants, at the very least, some pretty enthusiastic history buffs on the team. So I don't really know how like rigorous the information that you get is.
They're made by a series of people with different cultures and creeds and backgrounds. So you'd think that someone would understand. Yeah. But it's good to see that it's like, can you imagine all the research that goes into making a historically accurate game?
Yeah.
And for them to go, hey, we should do something with this. How about we just make a whole version of our game, which, as Kotaku Australia put it, a mode with no combat or story for people to go around in.
Yeah, and see, that's very, very cool, because there's a tendency for a bunch of people, and we ourselves, I think, have been guilty to some extent of this, where there's that sense that, like, hey, game designers, why don't you just put in an option where? And, like, we can kind of overestimate how simple that is. I think this is probably one of the least, like, less simple than other examples that we've given for this kind of thing. And so it's very cool that they've done that. I made this comment before we started, but it kind of reminds me of the Magic School Bus, like either the show or the games, but this opportunity to be all like, all right, kids, let's go back to virtual ancient Egypt and learn about how they did stuff. It's like, that just turns me on so much.
Oh, you know what would be really... Okay, even though they're giving us so much, I could still imagine more. Imagine virtual tours set in these kind of like worlds.
Yeah, and
where an actual Egyptologist could walk you around.
Mm, and see, that's super, super cool as well. And we don't know the full extent of this mode. Like, yeah, it might just be a discovery thing, or there might be little waypoints that lead you from place to place. And so it might kind of be like that anyway. Mm-hmm. The other thing that I think is super interesting about this is that certain Assassin's Creeds, like, I've been excited because I've wanted to learn more about the era, mm-hmm. you know? And mm-hmm. so, like, when I played Assassin's Creed 2, that was more because I liked Assassin's Creed 1. Like, it wasn't really, like, me looking to explore the era. But, like, Assassin's Creed 3, I was very excited to learn more about the Revolutionary War, which is something I don't know that much about.
Yeah.
And learnt... I understand it's not, like, again, the most rigorous historical source, but I have learnt more information for having played that game and read a lot of the encyclopedia stuff they have in there than otherwise, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
And ancient Egypt is a period in time that is massively exotified and like, mythologized. And it's going to be very interesting to see a piece of media that takes what I hope is a more serious and accurate kind of depiction of that time, because yeah. it's a fascinating era in human history. The Extra Credits team did a series on the Bronze Age, and I didn't know this, but the Bronze Age was long before the classical era, and there was a gap between them. I didn't know that. I thought we kind of went bronze and then immediately into classical, but we had the Bronze Age, and then all of that shit disappeared for like 800 years or something, and then we had the classical era.
Oh.
And so, like, there was a point in time where all civilization kind of collapsed for a while. And so it's going to be super interesting to see a historical kind of take on things before that collapse and what they... You know, and just learn more about it. I'm excited to do that, and it's cool that this game is facilitating that for me.
Plus, apparently, this new Assassin's Creed's going to be doing something different as well in the main gameplay. So, you know,
yeah,
two different reasons to get it.
It'll be good to see how they come back after their sabbatical. Now, you saw a new movie this week, didn't you?
Yes, because I was very clever. Not only have I been playing a very spooky game, Alien Isolations, but I recently saw It. I don't know
why
I paused.
The Stephen King movie, It. Yeah, yes. I was waiting for you to finish that sentence.
I was trying to insert a joke. I'm not that clever. Anyway, I went and saw It. I haven't actually seen the original version of the movie.
Have you read the book?
I have not read the book either. I am a terrible Stephen King fan because I'm not on a whole super a fan of his work.
I'm struggling to think of a single Stephen King artifact that I have absorbed. I saw mm-hmm. the James Franco TV series...
Is that The Mist?
On Stan. And there's probably something else. The Shining? Is The Shining one of his?
Yes.
Yeah, I've definitely seen The Shining. And there's at least one other, but I can't remember what it is.
Yeah, I've seen a lot of the movies made of his work.
Yeah.
And I haven't read his work, which... I've read a couple of his short stories. But anyway, I was interested to see It because it's come out. You know, people have said it was all right. It was actually pretty good. And I went and saw it, and I had a great time. I gotta be honest, not usually a fan of horror movies. I don't really seek out the kind of... I like horror movies, but as like a kind of communal friend laugh at a terrible movie
yeah.
kind of thing.
Yeah.
Like, I'll watch Friday the 13th because like it's so bad and all that kind of stuff.
It's called like schlock or something, right? Where
yeah,
you just
yeah.
where, you know, it's deliberately kind of cheesy and over the top.
Exactly, yeah. And I do like... I will watch horror movies here, especially here and there, but I'm not really drawn to them.
Mm.
And I was really pleased when I watched It that... The way it employs the scarier aspects of, like, the film, it does the thing I love when I could, for me, what I love in a good film, which is everything that happens is serving the narrative.
Mm-hmm.
And especially for an adaptation, like, nothing's wasted. There's no strange things happening or things that are just fan service on their own. Everything right. works together for the narrative. And
yeah, that's a good point, because it would have been pretty easy, because Pennywise has been like a thing long before this movie came. I want to say Pennywise has been a thing. Pennywise has been like a meme for long before this movie came out. And so it would have been pretty easy for them to like lean into that a little bit.
Yeah, definitely.
I'm not a huge horror fan, so I'm probably never going to see this movie. I still haven't worked up the courage to see Get Out, which I definitely need to see, because that's like a cultural artifact already. But what I've been hearing about it, other than everybody loves it, isn't it like going to go break some fucking records about like horror money making and shit?
Yeah, yeah. Apparently, it's the highest grossing horror movie or something like that.
Yeah, and that was a record recently set by Get Out, I'm pretty sure. So, I mean, it's a little bit disappointing to see, you know, Jordan... It's Peele made that one, right?
Yeah, yes.
Yeah, that was Peele. Key was doing something else at that point. But it's disappointing to see one half of Key and Peele have their awesome achievement slightly overshadowed here.
I mean, this is the way with movies and box offices and things like that.
Yeah, I mean... But and if anything, like this, it's that whole stand on the shoulders of giants thing. Like every time there's a success in a genre people are insisting is kind of dead or kind of niche, it allows the next one to be more publicized and be more successful. Yeah. So like having a great horror movie is good for all horror movies.
Yeah, I can't wait to see what everyone does next, the guys do next. But I think... I don't want to spoil too much of it, but the thing I would sort of phrase it the way
this
I would
conversation
sort of,
is impossible is yeah. isn't the conversation.
Yeah, just what I want to say though is when they because they don't adapt the whole book, they've broken it, right?
Oh, okay.
When that came at the end and it goes, oh, this is the first chapter, I actually wasn't upset.
Yeah, because it's pretty easy to carve content up into chunks. But the fact that, again, like, I've not seen it, but I've also not seen anybody complain about that.
Yeah.
So, I guess most people are probably fine with the idea of it being a series or whatever.
I just thought they did such a great job. I would recommend, like, anyone go see it. Even though, unless you really don't like being scared, I would say it's worth getting scared in this to see this movie.
All right, well, maybe I have to go and do that. But Get Out is definitely first.
Yes, yes, we should both watch Get Out for sure.
Yeah, I might make a good one-off episode actually.
Oh,
Have been seeing some stuff that's the opposite of scary in the last kind of week or two.
Yep.
So The Good Place is actually fucking awesome. The second season of it just started, but the first season came out a while ago, and I remember seeing like trailers and stuff way back when and being like, oh, I should check that out, but I never did. And I don't know if it's only just been released on Netflix or what, but it's available on Netflix in Australia.
Yep.
And it's actually pretty fun. Like, there are some people who are saying that it's like a complete game changer. I wouldn't go that far, but it's a very unique comedy. The basic premise... You've not seen it, have you, John?
No, not at all.
Yeah. So, the basic premise is that Kristen Bell dies before the series starts. And, you know, she wakes up, she's like, oh, what's going on? And she meets Ted Danson, who is Becca from Becca.
Oh, great.
And he's all like, hey,
I'm in.
Bad news, you're dead. Good news, you made it to the good place, which is awesome because only like the top 1% of the top 1% of good people actually make it here. And so you get to live the rest of your life, the rest of eternity in the good place, in luxury. And it's great because of all of the wonderful like humanitarian work you did.
And it's called The Good Place?
It's called The Good Place. Yeah.
Okay, nice.
So, like, there's one of the early jokes is something like she asks about like, so who was right? And he goes, Christianity had it about 5% right, Hindus about 5% right, Buddhism about, everybody got about 5% right, except this one dude called Teddy who got high on shrooms one night and basically just guessed the whole thing. So
good joke.
Yeah, it's a very funny show, and it's surprisingly like it's because wholesome's the wrong word, but there's a very positive energy about it. Despite the fact that the whole premise of the show is that the character that Kristen Bell plays should not be there. She finds out very early on that they've mistaken her for someone else.
Uh-oh.
And so she's in the good place when she should be in the bad place.
Oh no. And, like, with everyone else.
Yeah, with the rest of the 99.99% of humanity. And so she's got to try and, like, it makes it sound quite trite when I say her whole thing is trying not to get found out, because it's much cleverer than that premise makes it sound. It's a very, like, precise and funny show. And there's, like, because there's this whole thing about, in order to, like, not get busted, she finds someone else and tries to learn ethics from him, and he's like this ethics professor, and so he's constantly talking about, like, ancient philosophers and like moral quandaries and utilitarianism, and so each episode has a little bit of a focus on some of these, like, philosophical concepts, not in, like, a super heavy way, but as sort of a theme for that episode. And so it's very clever and very fun. And it's got a good sort of, like, pace and energy to it. And I think it's a series where the episodes are only, like, 20 minutes long. So it's also very concise. It's just, it's really well done.
Mm-hmm. I've been
fucking loving it.
Okay. Well, that sounds hilarious. I'll have to have a look at that. Have you been watching anything else?
Yeah, I also started on Star Trek Discovery and The Orville this week, which is sort of like two different ends of the same spectrum.
I love that you're watching both of those series at, like, the same time.
Well, I mean, I wish I could take credit for that idea, but they were kind of released around the same time. So, well done marketing, I guess. So, The Orville, for anybody who doesn't know, that's a Seth MacFarlane show that's sort of set up as being a bit of a spoof of Star Trek.
Yeah.
But when you actually start watching it, you realize that it's not a better act. I'm not the first person to say this, but a much better description of it is that it's a fan film version of Star Trek. Like, there's only, like, one or two jokes in the thing, and it's kind of a low budget, well-meaning kind of meh of a show.
Okay.
It's
really selling it. Yep.
Yeah. I think that one's on Netflix. I can't actually remember. I saw that at a friend's place. But it's not something I want to oversell because it's not that great. Like, but it's not mean, I guess is what I'm trying to get at. Like, you hear Seth MacFarlane's doing a Star Trek spoof and you expect something really crass and really, like, lowbrow. And it's kind of not. Like, it's kind of just a fine show. And it's something that's very easy to sort of watch, I imagine, like, sort of while you're doing other things and whatnot. But Star Trek Discovery is ridiculously high budget. That blew my mind at how much money they threw at that one.
It looks super flashy.
Yeah, and it definitely is. Now, I'm enjoying it so far. The main character is someone, what's her name? She's a character that's appeared in other, I think in, like, the original series or something, and so they've done this whole thing. And so in that, she's called Number One. But in this, they've given her a real name. And so her name's Michael something. I can't remember her surname. But she's, like, the first human raised at the Vulcan Academy or whatever. So she's got the whole logic versus empathy quandary that Spock kind of had.
Yep.
And her whole thing is, like, she's the first officer on this ship, and it's set, like, I don't know very much about the history of Star Trek, but it's sort of set at the outbreak of the Federation Klingon sort of conflict.
Yeah.
And, like, the inciting incidents into that. And so it's surprisingly warlike for a Star Trek series, because, like, in the first episode, they were already, like, at each other's throats, and there's all of these questions about, do we fire first or do we try diplomacy and all of this kind of thing. Like, it's very much, like, battle-oriented, and so I don't know where the rest of the series is going to go, because maybe they were just going for a big flashy opening.
Mm.
But, I'm hoping it isn't just all gun blazes and starship battles, because as fucking cool as hell as they looked in this super high-budget series, I would like to see more of that whole, oh no, we're stuck on a planet, and our transporters aren't working, and so we've got to navigate the native population, like that kind of stuff.
So I heard that they're kind of moving away from procedural with the new Star Trek. They're not.
Procedural itself isn't necessarily the problem. Like, I'm totally fine with them having, like, a strong continuity over a whole season. But, like I said, I don't want the whole thing to just be Klingons every single episode, and all it's about is shooting all the Klingons and blowing up the Klingon starships and that kind of thing. Because
that would be too much to me.
I can get that anywhere, you know? Like, I can go and watch the fucking Star Trek, the J.J. Abrams Star Trek movies if I just want to see a bunch of shit explode in space. I'm hoping there'll be a little bit more of the whole discovery and science and diplomacy, and I really hope that's a core theme, because that's always been a core theme
also
of Star Trek.
Yeah, also, so the thing that I noticed is the Kleons, they've kind of changed how they look.
Yeah, yeah, they do look very good. There are a couple of scenes where one or two of the actors, I don't know how to put this, but I don't think that they're sort of trained with prosthetics because they're not really expressing through them as much as I would hope they would.
Mm.
But the prosthetics themselves look fucking amazing.
Yeah, I don't know. I have to watch the show, but it just seems like an interesting direction, but not one I care for.
No, I will. This is just a pure quality thing because I'm not, like, familiar. Like, if you asked me to... Like, Worf was a Klingon, right?
Yes.
Yeah, and he looks very different to how these Klingons look.
Yeah.
But,
Yeah, have you watched a lot of the original sort of series run?
I think I've watched literally a single episode. I think the first one.
Yeah, I'm such a fan of the original series. Like, The Next Generation and Deep Space Nine and Voyager. And it came at a point during my childhood where it's firmly lodged in my head. I'll have to try and devoid myself of that when I watch the show.
See, I've watched a couple of The Next Generation, and like it's the problem for me is just the production values. Like I know that's kind of a sucky reason to not get into such a renowned series, but I find it difficult to, you know, the editing is just very loose and, you know, the dialogue is not that strong. And it just kind of sucks to see Patrick Stewart in something and not be completely flawed by him.
Yes. You know,
because he's still very good. It's just there's like, what's it called? There's that idea that in like film, because editing has the final say, every step before that is kind of not lesser than the editing phase, but sort of at the mercy of editing. And so, like, I feel like there's some Patrick Stewart that I'm losing through some of the later steps and that kind of thing. It's kind of a wanky thing to get into, but apparently Deep Space Nine is pretty good, so I've been thinking of giving that a shot.
God, no, I think the Star Trek series, like all of them, is just so personal. Like, you say that, and I want to say no, and I would think other people would disagree with me. But anyway. It's good. So yeah, maybe I'll check that out. I don't know. I feel like I've had enough Star Trek, but hopefully someone out there will enjoy it.
I think that if you're a hardcore Star Trek fan, it's probably better to go into this trying to like thinking of it as not exactly a Star Trek type thing. I think that's the safest way to go into it because like I said, to me, it doesn't really feel what I expect Star Trek to be.
Okay. So I think the last thing we're going to talk about is something about the wonderful game Pyre.
Yeah, so this is just a small little note that I saw like minutes before we started recording today. Pyre is getting a free update where they are introducing a sort of an iron mode version of the game. I don't know whether or not I should mention this. There's also a sale, but that's going to be over by the time this comes out.
Most likely.
Seeing that, you know, the game is releasing an update to its gameplay mode and they're doing a bit of a sale and promoting some other stuff. I like that because to me, it suggests that they're doing pretty well with Pyre and Pyre is an amazing game. So I'm glad that there's like progress and momentum behind it. This Iron Man mode is not something... I don't know if I would use it, but the idea is it's supposed to be for some of your later replays of the game. Because without wanting to get into spoilers, it's one of those games where I do want to replay it because there's story stuff that I've not seen because of how I made my choices as I played through that game. And the Iron Man mode is supposed to just kind of keep the play revitalized. So in the original game, if you lose a right, the game keeps going. Right, like it the story responds to that loss, and it doesn't. There's not like a huge game over screen. But if you want, you can replay it and restart rights and go back to checkpoints and things and get so you never lose, even though the story will respond to your loss and keep moving. The Iron Man mode, what do they call it? A True Nightwings is what they're calling it. The True Nightwings mode. You can't refresh that, and then there's also like a lot of the bonuses and upgrades you get come a lot earlier in the game. So you get your full like there's a thing that is introduced about halfway through. It's called like Feats of Valor or something like that, and that's where if you do these little tricks for the audience, you get rewards for them. That's introduced much earlier.
Feats of Glory.
Feats of Glory. That's what it is. And then there's also the constellations. About halfway through the game, you unlock these difficulty modifiers, basically. So it'll be like, if you turn on this modifier, you'll get 15% more experience, but all of your opponents will move 10% faster or something like that. And so you have to select at least a certain number of them every game as well. And so it's a cool. very interesting kind of way to play the game. And maybe if I get around to playing that like a third or fourth time, I'll give that one a go.
Hey, you know, more gameplay modes. That's great. I love that stuff.
Yeah, I mean, one of the playthroughs for Pyro I need to do is where I just deliberately lose every single right because I want to see what happens. Like, it's such a good, because I'm trying to figure out the best way to phrase this. It's so trite to kind of say, oh, there are different story options that you can pick, but there's something very elegant about how they do it in this. And again, I can't say why because it's a spoiler, but please, if you've been considering playing Pyro, check it out. Mm-hmm. And you'll totally understand what I mean when I say there's a huge motivation for me to replay it and play it differently.
Yeah, I just find the game so beautiful. I just love looking at it and playing it. So that's great.
I'm not going to, but I could talk about Pyre for hours.
Well, yeah.
Do we want to wrap up there?
Yep, that sounds good to me.
All right. Well, thanks everybody for joining us for the Fastcast. If you like what we do, head to iTunes. You can search for us there. Our website is slowpokespodcast.com. And as we mentioned near the start of the show, we are doing a giveaway at the moment. So check that out on facebook.com/slowpokespodcast.
Yep.
And Twitter at slowpokescast.
Yes. Facebook, when this episode gets released, a little bit later, we'll probably release the post for the giveaway.
Yep. I mean, well, I don't see any reason why the timing's going to be too difficult to land on that. Yep. And Twitter, there's not a specific thing you need to respond to. You just need to make sure you tweet at slowpokescast with hashtag slowpokesgiveaway.
Yep. Perfect. And obviously, our next game is Shadow of Mordor.
Yes, and as I said, we both quite liked it, so it's kind of a positive episode for the most part. Check that out a week after this goes up.
Yep.
And thanks once again, everybody, for joining us for the Fastcast.
Have a good week. Slow.